And from Master's Whispers from Eternity. O King of Kings, train thou in me, in the camp of discipline, the noble qualities of calmness and self-control. Be thou their divine general, like Krishna of yore, against the invading hordes of darkness, passion, and greed. Protect the celestial kingdom of my mind against entry by the tenacious warriors of evil. Let thy banner of peace wave always above the strong castle of my soul. Oh, Master's words are so much fun. Imagine just what energy was flowing through him at all times. When Swami picked up the original version of Whispers from Eternity and decided to edit it, he said that these poems just poured out of Master so spontaneously, just, you know, image after image and allegorical thing, poetic thought. Swami said it was just, he had to just kind of go through the shrubbery and just pull out pieces of it because the images would go so far. As it happened in my life with Swami, I would helicopter in periodically for these interesting moments. And I helicoptered in just when he decided to, I don't mean literally, but you understand, when he decided to edit that book. And he edited by hand, and then I typed it into the computer for him. And he was talking just about how, you know, you would start with Master in a submarine deep in the cosmic ocean, and then you would fly up like a jet airplane, and then you would flutter like a butterfly, and then you would become a peacock of expanded awareness. And he just had to take out a few of those images until you could just get the picture a little bit better. And he really felt that just Master was saying to him, you know, it poured out of me, now just prune it down a little bit so that we can understand it. But he was so careful in the editing of that. I mean, Swamiji had every right at that point. He did, well, I don't know what the date in this is, but it was later in his life for sure. He'd written countless books. He had every right to stand in the confirmed attunement that he felt with Master. But he was so attentive and so respectful, and even after he felt like he would pick up the pencil and the poem would be there, and he would just go right through it like this. He never had to stop and think. He never had to weigh one thought against the other. He never had to wonder whether this was right. He just was going like this. He was editing by hand faster than I could type to keep up with him. I mean, I would fall behind and have to spend many hours in there catching up, excuse me. He said, in fact, he started dreaming of this little pencil, he said, that would just go in front of him and just make little marks on the page. I have to clear my throat. But what I was saying is, even after all of that, all of the superconscious feeling of Master's presence, all the evidence of the inspiration because of the way it flowed, he had Dharmadas and Nirmala sit down when he'd finished the book before it went off to press. They had the original, they had his version. He had them compare it word by word to make sure that nothing that was significant had been left out. You know, that even if words had been removed or slightly rearranged, that nothing was left out. There were, out of the whole book, there were like 7 or 8 places where they had Swami, where they said, you know, consider this, and maybe 3 or 4 changes. And then one more thing that was very interesting about that book was Swamiji's, he was famous for editing and re-editing. And in fact, everyone who would publish his books, everybody involved in the publishing, always knew that when he said it was finished, let it rest a little while and let's see before it is. I mean, famously, the book about art as a hidden message, I think that they put out 3 editions in 1 year because he just kept feeling it wasn't quite right until it was done. So he goes through Whispers, I type it, he reads it, he makes a few tiny changes, then he pronounces it done. His secretary, Lakshman, and I look at each other like, what are the chances? But he had interrupted a printing cycle to edit this book because he felt Master was calling him to do it. That Master didn't want the version that we had, he wanted it edited. And so Swami was really under the gun for time, so he was going to turn it in. And nobody wanted to believe him. So I was appointed. I said, sir, nobody believes you're finished with this book. What are we supposed to do on this? He said, if I keep editing it, he said, the vibration is going to shift from being Master's vibration to mine. He said, and this is not my book, this is Master's book. And he said, I'm not going to look at it again. And it was so emphatic and such a different answer. And so it was sent off. Now, Swamiji himself had said on more than one occasion, going back in 1990 was the first time he said this, when he wrote The Essence of Self-Realization, which he wrote in the guest house at Crystal Hermitage. For some reason, he was living there rather than in the hermitage itself. Maybe there was some kind of work being done. I don't remember the reason. And the power went out. And so he had to write a lot of that book with a pen, rather than on a computer, which he said later was greatly to the good because it quieted him down and it helped him to really hear what Master had to say. Because he was writing it from notes that he had, but sometimes because the book was in subject categories, he needed a little more on a certain subject. And he would say to Master, I need a little more. And then he would hear Master's voice in his mind reminding Swamiji of things that he had said. I think in some cases perhaps finishing thoughts, but also reminding him of things that he might not have written down that he'd heard. And Swami, he said that the relationship was so active that he would say, sir, I didn't quite get that. Could you repeat it? It wasn't a vision. It wasn't an external voice, but it was the intuition inside of him coming to him, and then he would write like that. And not being at the computer, but just sitting quietly, he said, made the relationship more easier, more vivid, less interrupted. And after Swami wrote that book is when he said out loud, he said, my consciousness has become so merged with Master. He said, I don't know where he ends and I begin. And now, you know, Swami never spoke anything just for effect. He would never make a statement like that unless it was true. Later he went farther and he said, I said, my thoughts have become Master's thoughts. It's my consciousness has become Master's consciousness. Now, when a disciple makes a statement like that, there's no egoic self making that statement. You know, you can't say something like that if there is a relationship to I that is in any way separate from thou. Exactly. It doesn't come to you. When Master was commended on his humility, someone remarked about how humble he was. He said, how can there be humility when there is no sense of self? So there's this mystery that I've referred to often because I'm constantly myself intrigued by it, which is the difference between learning to discipline ourselves to express the right attitude and simply having transformed our consciousness that no other attitude is possible. It's not like we have to try. It's just like we do it. I was very touched many years ago when the first person who was a close friend of mine became a mother, had a baby. She married and had a child very early, so I was probably 20. It must have been just a little later because the child was already walking around. And she came over to visit with her son, and he was a lively lad. And my house was not at all set up for toddlers. So the experience of our friendship, which was as we talked to each other and would sit on the couch as girls were wont to do, except it was constantly interrupted because she was constantly having to get up and save her child from some, you know, catastrophic experience given all the things that were going on in my house. So it was like that. All of us who are the have been parents or grandparents know exactly what this story is. And after a time of the complete disruption of what I had come to expect in our relationship, I said something tactless on the level of, how can you stand this? Even though I had great sympathy with being a mother, it was just so impossible. And her answer I've never forgotten. She just looked at me, and she knew what I was asking, sort of puzzled. But she answered me brilliantly. Oh, she said, when you look at me and my son, you see two. She said, I only see one. There's no difference here. This is not me taking care of my son. This is me. Just like that. Anandamoyi Ma, she was asked once when she was in crowds of people. There was a little film that Mahavir put out, shared with some of us, which was a film of Anandamoyi Ma, this great woman saint of India who had thousands and thousands of followers. She passed away in 1982. Master writes about her as the bliss-permeated mother in his autobiography. So you see in this film, and she's just constantly being crowded around. There's no order or system. She's a saint. People want to get close to her. When Swami was in India at the end of his life, in order for him to get out of the hall after he gave a talk with hundreds or thousands of people there, men, mostly men, had to line the departure line and hold hands like this. Viraj is nodding his head because he was there. Because otherwise, everyone would just throw themselves at his feet, bring their babies and place them at his feet, because, and rightly, the touch of a saint was liberating, but he needed to go somewhere else, and so he would move. But Anandamoyi Ma never set up, or rarely. She operated very differently. So you see all these people just crowding around her, and she's sort of pushing through, and people are trying to give her space, and someone said something sympathetically, not different from what I was saying to my friend. You know, don't you find this hard with all these people touching you and leaning up against you? And Ma said, when my hand brushes against my thigh, do I feel interrupted in my life? Do I feel imposed upon? It's not discipline. It's not a good attitude. It's consciousness. It's there that they look at this world and just see something different. And that's a promise that's going to happen to us. How can you live this way? What way? What are you talking about? This is simply that which is. So one of the things that we need to understand about spiritual life is it isn't making it all look right. It isn't getting all our actions to match and being able to claim that we have the right schedule and all this is done and we always do this or do that. It's none of those things. Of course, those are the side effects of what it is that we're really trying to do. And Jesus talks to us in this particular reading that Swami has here. And Jesus is saying, you know, if you love those who love you, and I love the way he says that even the tax collectors do that. Tax collectors were not very popular people at that period of time. You know, everybody has their own family. Everybody has a mother and a father, and many people have a spouse or a child. And it is true that for some people, even to love that many is a big step. So he's not saying that the tax collectors have accomplished nothing. He's just saying that it's not enough. It's not enough if the whole premise of what you're doing is this is me and this is what I get. I am the one who's doing it. And of course I love my mother because she took care of me. We talk about this. This is a Vaishya exchange. Vaishya means, oh, I'm perfectly happy to give as long as I get back for it. You know, as long as these are the kind of relationships in which we keep score. You know, what are you doing for me? Well, then I'll do for you. And if you stop doing for me, then I'll stop doing for you. And it makes perfect sense. That's the world we live in. What's in it for me? There was a children's character in Charlotte's Web, that book. There was a character. Was he a rat? I think he was a rat. In every circumstance, his question was really simple. What's in it for me, Charlotte? He would ask. Charlotte was the spider, I believe. What's in it for me? And as long as there was something in it for me, then of course I'm going to come forward and do this. And depending on where you are on the spectrum of awakening, even being willing to give something rather than merely to take, that's progress. But even the tax collectors do this. So we can't be really proud of ourselves. There's many, many, many benefits to spiritual sangha. I talk about God, Guru, and Swami in my life, and right after that, and pretty much really in the same story, it's like the different legs of the same stool, is Guru Bhais. Brothers and sisters on the spiritual path, kindred spirits, those souls, those other one among the thousand, fortunately, look at us, there's a large number of us, but there are a lot of thousands who are not very interested in what we're doing. But having brothers and sisters, having somebody on this planet for whom your life doesn't seem completely nuts, and who has the same idea, and who doesn't applaud you just because you love those who love you. You know, there's this tremendous danger that happens when we live among people who have no particular aspiration for perfection, which is that we can begin to think we're pretty tall. You know, one of the difficulties I had as a child growing up, especially the first 15 years of my life, were spent in El Paso, Texas. I'm not sure I've been back to there since. I've been back to Texas, but I don't think I've been back to El Paso since I left at the age of 15. At the time that I lived there, it was different than California. I'll just put it like that. When I came to Southern California after that, there was a great exhalation, you know, that I was more where I needed to be. Again, my throat is dry. Give me a moment. My family is very intellectual, and especially my brother and I were, my brother especially, I mean, I don't know what his IQ was, but he's still alive, is very high. And he, as I've mentioned many times before, he and his partner were they formed a debate team, and they won the Texas State Championship twice. Texas is a very large state. And so that was sort of the kind of guy he was. I could never touch him in that arena, but I was no sloucher. So we went through these schools in Texas, and my younger sister came up behind us, but she was mostly in California when she was in school. And we were pretty impressive for the atmosphere that we were in. But it wasn't that we were that tall. It was just that the company was kind of short. That was the issue. But there was this very strange experience that happened, especially to me, which actually has taken me much of my life to overcome. I got the impression that I was tall, and I didn't realize the company was short. But a part of me also knew that the accolades were undeserved. So I became kind of schizophrenic, is almost the word I can use. You know, on one hand, you're being described in a certain way, and on the other hand, you actually know who you are. And it just went like this all the time, but it made me, and then I got to California where it was different. Let's just say that. We moved into this university town of Claremont, and, you know, it was finally like, oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not a real short person, but I am by no means the giant that was put in front of me when I was small. But when you're with Guru Bhais, when you're with a community of people who are all genuinely understanding what it is that we're really trying to do and what it means, it keeps all of us humble, keeps all of us honest. And that's why, you know, environment is so important. Master says environment is even stronger than willpower, but it's not merely that these souls support us in our spirituality, but they keep us aware of what the potential is that we're trying to do. If we're one among a thousand, then we just look at those thousands. But even the tax collectors can be nice. What God is calling from us, for us, what is put in front of us, is the perfection of our Father. That's how Jesus puts it. Be therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. Jesus said, that which I do, ye shall do, and greater things. Now, these are not like compliments. These are not, you know, the masters lining up and cheering because, you know, we've deigned to come onto the spiritual path. There's an even more profound promise here that we have to understand. Until we really relinquish forever this delusory idea that we are limited, we will suffer. And it's not God who's compelling us to perfection. It's our own hearts that are compelling us to it. I mean, all of us experience that. Those of us who've been on this path even for years and years and years. As long as there is this any inclination in us that clings to anything other than the complete surrender to the will of God as it comes to us. Complete surrender to Divine Mother's guidance wherever it takes us. And she takes us to some pretty hairy places we would not choose to go. And certainly she's taken me to a lot of those places. You know, this is not my itinerary. You know, I have a ticket. I have a ticket to Hawaii, not in the rainy season. Do you see? Like this. This is where I'm supposed to be. Tropical islands. Everybody loves me. People just talk around about how nice I am. Isn't that so? Isn't that so? Isn't that so? She says, nope. We're going through, lo, though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And we do over and over again. I mean, whether it even looks like anything to anybody else, that's this is all within our own hearts. You know, a person's, you know, we never know. And if we have decided to be one among that thousand, and if we have sincerely made that commitment with any part of ourselves, she's listening. You know, this morning, for those of you who are here a little before our service started, we did our purification. I seek purification by the grace of God. The Master says, open your heart to me, and I will enter and take charge of your life. We said, I seek purification. It's interesting. Swami didn't have us say, because Swami wrote those words. He doesn't have us say, yes, sir, come in. We just get to be silent there and decide whether or not we're really going to agree with this proposition. But listen to those words. I will enter in and take charge of your life. And he's kind of a bully once he comes in the sense that he wants the whole space to himself. And whatever he finds in there that's annoying to him, he just kicks it out. Our precious this, our precious that, our precious this, our precious that. It all just has to go away. Now, I mean, that all sounds like, oh my God, here we go, you know, crucifixion again and again and again. But not really. It's more like, you know, it's Divine Mother's coming in with a huge basket of roses and wonderful sweets and glorious experiences and endless sunshine. But she has to make room for it. And just, we have to let her do that. We just have to transcend all the rest of it. You know, the Masters are who they are because they faced into it and they did it. You know, I loved that Biraj song. I never really know how things are going to match, and sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. Brave were the people who lived in these hills. And we have Todd going up and down the piano and even drags his hand across the whole keyboard, you know, with that just this side of not quite cheesy, but perfect, you know. You just go from the bottom to the top. And every time you hear that sound, you know what that is. And it really works, doesn't it? This is who we are. Out of 1,000, only one even, it only occurs to them to seek. And out of all those who seek, only a handful. The Gita actually says, and out of 1,000 who seek, only one finds. Master said, our percentage is higher. He never said how much higher, but he said higher. But what difference does it make? Because our success is guaranteed. It's guaranteed whether we like it or not. Because once we even get the smallest glimpse of what that transcendence really feels like, where we were seems so confining. My friend with her little baby, it's like, how could this be a problem? You know, yes, of course, everything has changed, but this is who I am now. What joy, what joy, what joy. It's only, Swamiji said to us once, just about delusion in general, he said, once you're out of it, you can't even imagine why you were ever attracted. It would be like, you know, people asking us to do something now that it's just repellent to us. It's not like we have to discipline ourselves, you know, not to become murderers or thieves or, you know, just low-life degenerates in whatever way. It's not like, oh, you know, I have to try so hard not to. But it's a clue, because that's how it all turns out in the end. We take it for the joy. And even though it may look to us like we're not being rewarded, we're being rewarded, we're being honored, because Divine Mother believes us. We had that moment. I seek purification by the grace of God. Fine, I'm going to move into your heart and I'm going to run your life. Master said to one of his disciples, when the disciple accepted it, Master clapped his hands together and rubbed them like this. Now we can get to work. You know, and part of us says, hooray, and part of us says, oh no. But just put yourself on the hooray side. You know, use our discipline before we have the consciousness. I don't know what you're doing with me, Divine Mother, but I know you are taking me where I want to go. And this is my comfort. If there was another way to get there, you would take me by that route. You would only take me by this route if it was the only way to become free. The power of spiritual life is not that we never stumble, never fall, never weep. I mean, give all that up. Just give it all up. It doesn't make any difference. If we can just be, you know, embarrassingly, humiliatingly ridiculous all the way, as long as we get there. And get there means very simple, the end of suffering, the eternity of bliss. And Mother is very particular. We say, well, I have enough bliss. I'll take a little suffering. No, no, she says, actually, even that too. God alone, God alone, God alone. But you see, it's the joy of it. It's not the process of getting there. It's the joy of the goal. The people who climb Mount Everest, I don't think they have a lot of fun going up and down, but they're so thrilled that they have done it. That's us. I mean, that doesn't even begin to touch it. But that's us. You know, we should be so thrilled that we have been awake. You know, how feels everyone? How is everyone? We are awake, and we are increasingly ready. You know, that's our mantra. And let it always be so, until the deed is done. God bless you.
Brave were the people who lived in these hills. the great warriors who confronted the foe, to defend what is holy, to defend what is true. Our Lord on mankind did this duty bestow. Glad all our children who people these hills, glad in the vision their hearts understand what became of past struggles. Now the records are still, but courage still lingers, giving strength to the land. Men hunger for riches, for power and for fame. By favor they think they will grow. The battles they fight, the victories they win, are never the victories they know. Men hunger for riches, for power and for fame. By favor they think they will grow. The battles they fight, the victories they win, are never the victories they know. Brave were the people who lived in these hills. Brave the great warriors who confronted the foe, to defend what is holy, to defend what is true. Our Lord on mankind did this duty bestow. Our Lord on mankind did this duty bestow.